It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
So that was the sound of a Thursday night in the streets of Washington after our Republican National Convention ended. The president gave his speech. The fireworks went off. And that's what happened. As people went out into the streets in front of the White House, they were literally attacked. And what you just heard then, I'm sure you've heard this by now, but we have to talk about this. Senator Rand Paul and his wife, Kelly, were seen in, if you saw the visual of that clip we just listened to, they were deluged. They were spotted by protesters, rioters, anarchists who came screaming. And first it was just a few, then it was 10, then it was 20, and then it ended up being over 100. And meanwhile, there was no protection. As people left the White House, there was no protection for them outside. The D.C. police were not there to protect them. I mean, not officially. They were just there like they're always there. There was no separating the two sides. And so let me just talk about Senator Paul and his wife, Kelly, first. As Rand Paul talks about it, he said that they really thought they were going to be killed. And as you see the video, there are so few police guarding them. One has a bicycle, and he's trying to protect them with this bicycle, and a protester comes in, practically knocks the policeman over, and Rand Paul kind of helps catch him. And you see all of this. Kelly Paul was very upset by this. She's a little woman. You know, Rand Paul's a small man, and so she's a small, beautiful, blonde lady. And both of them strong Christians. They were on Fox and Friends, and Kelly told it from her perspective. Let's listen.
It was absolutely terrifying. I have never experienced anything like that in my life. I hope no one else ever has to. We felt completely powerless. Before some of the video that I think you have shown where the police with the bikes were kind of creating a moving barricade for us, in the minutes before the police with the bikes showed up, we were completely encircled and surrounded, pressed up against two cops who we were surrounded by people who were screaming in our faces, yelling that they were going to F us up, screaming, say her name. And at one point, you know, at first I was trying to look in their eyes and trying to have any kind of reason or to see someone as a human being. And I realized they did not see us as human beings. We were Trump supporters, so they absolutely despised us. Even though if we were ever in a situation and maybe could have talked to some of those folks and they knew about Rand's background in criminal justice reform and the things that I've spoken out on, we could have had agreement. But in that moment, it was just like this bloodthirsty mob. And all I could think of was the man who was kicked in the head in Portland, you know, a week ago, or the man whose jaw was broken, or 8-year-old Sequoia Turner. I really felt that we were going to lose our lives. I thought someone was going to throw a brick. I mean, it was the most terrifying moment of my entire life.
They kept shouting, the protesters around Senator Paul and his wife, say her name. Her name is Breonna Taylor. And what they completely were ignorant of is that Rand Paul is actually the sponsor of the Justice for Breonna Taylor Act. Of course, this has nothing to do with common sense or really with justice. It has to do with mob violence and the destruction of the country. And I want to give you, I have to say in a personal way, a lot of my friends got caught in that same vortex, and I've heard lots of stories. What happened was as they left the White House, as I said, there was no protection for them. And so the police just immediately told them, like many of them were staying right across the street or in places close by. And rather than being able to walk the 200 yards to their hotel, they were sent off to the other side of the White House, and they were told to just keep walking and keep walking. And they'd reach another intersection, they were told to keep walking. Some of them walked so far that they were not prepared. They didn't have proper shoes. They had to take their shoes off. And they ended up being out and not, they could not get to their apartment or their hotels. Some of them till like 3:30 in the morning because they couldn't get there. It was unsafe. And one, they finally made it to their hotel. It was just a nightmare trying to do that. They finally got an Uber driver, and this is like hours into trying to get back when their hotel was very close. They finally get into their hotel, and she goes up to her room. Her husband stays in the lobby and is at the door when protesters start banging trying to get into the hotel. And she's trying to get her husband to get out of the way, to come back. And the protesters were trying to break into the hotel lobby and attack people inside the hotel. And then the irony of all ironies, and I think Rand Paul mentioned this too, that in their hotel, when they finally got there the next morning, elevators opened up and there were all these Black Lives Matter protesters in Black Lives Matter t-shirts with big, black, beautiful, expensive vans picking them up, taking them somewhere. So this is a problem, ladies and gentlemen. This is a serious problem. And if you think it's just, you know, if you're still thinking this is white against black, or this is about, you know, making everything right with racism. Do you remember Alice Johnson? We played her testimony at the convention just a couple of days ago. She is the black woman who was in prison for 20 years, and she gave the most powerful testimony of getting out of prison and how Jesus Christ had changed her life and how grateful she was to President Trump for his prison reform, sentence reform. And she went on and on. She just was so grateful, just poured out from her heart. We played it for you. Well, guess what happened to her? The exact same thing. She came out to that crowd and they spit on her. They attacked her. They did to her, she had to take her heels off to defend herself. They did to her exactly what they did to Rand and Kelly Paul and to a lot of my friends, whose names you would know. Some of them got away, thank God, because they're recognizable and would be in great danger, just like Rand Paul was. But they did the same thing to Alice Johnson. They did the same thing to her. And then later in the evening, she actually I don't know if it's a guest, it's a new kind of social media that's very high-end. A lot of very high-end people are on this. Don't ask me to explain it. All I know is what I've read. Is it has to do with audio. It's more sophisticated than what the rest of us peons use. It's called Clubhouse. So she was in a Clubhouse room, and she was there talking to Gayle King, MC Hammer, Van Jones, and other really notable black notable people. And guess what happened? They piled on to her, and they told her never to repeat that story again. Don't you dare tell that story of how you were released from prison and how the president, you know, worked on criminal justice reform. How dare you? Don't say that story again. That's what happened to Alice Johnson. So in regard to D.C., there's a lot to say about it. I told you this at least a week ago. I told you. And now more people are hearing about this. I don't even know how it came to my attention, I guess, because I know people who know things like this. But the group that organized Occupy Wall Street is coming to D.C. Well, I think they're probably already there. Occupy Wall Street, Occupy D.C. It was a mess. People, they set up a tent city. People were raped. The police would not even go in there. It was a nightmare for months, weeks on end. I don't know if it went into months, but I don't remember how many. And they finally had to be taken out. But, of course, you can imagine the waste, the garbage. And I'm not talking about wrappers. I'm talking about human waste. It was just a nightmare. So now they're coming to D.C. Starting September 17th, they're coming together on Lafayette Square. That's right across from the White House, to lay siege to the White House, they say, for 50 days of nonviolent protest, of course. Why? Because we will not let real Donald Trump, that's his hashtag, steal the election. This is the hashtag White House siege, and the response is electric. All right, so they're going to be in D.C., and the point is, I think, among other things, the mayor is doing nothing. I don't think the Capitol Police, I think there were some around Rand Paul who were working very hard, but I guarantee you that was a very tepid response. The police knew better than to let the people from the RNC go pour out into the streets with Black Lives Matter and Antifa anarchists. They knew better than that, and yet they did it. And so I don't think we can have any confidence. So they're going to be camping out and rioting right in front of the White House. It's like right across that street that you've been walking down. Sometimes if you go to Washington, you walk in that street that's blocked off in front of the White House. It's right there. Lafayette Park is right there. Are they really going to let them do this? It's where St. John's Church is, where they tried to burn it down. It's right there. And so then another clip that I can't play for you because it's so bad. A Black Lives Matter protester crawled up on a stage. He had the microphone. He's an official dude, you see. He's one of the leaders. And he said, I'm at the point, I'm going to have to, delete myself here. I'm at the point where I'm ready to put these police in the effing grave, he shouted. I'm at the point where I want to burn the blanking White House down. I want to take it to the senators. I want to take it to the Congress. I want to take the fight to them. And at the end of the day, if they ain't going to hear us, we're going to burn the blank down. I'm one that talk real blank, he went on, saying that he had traveled to New York to D.C. to make his message heard. The same way I blanked police up in New York. I blanked cops up here in D.C. The same way I bust police in the head in New York. I bust police in the head in D.C. What they didn't have on this paper, because I listened to it, he went on to say, some of you are here and you want to be part of this, but you're not willing to be violent. And if you're not willing to fight and be violent, then you need to leave, or you don't need to get whatever he said. But this is what's happening in your capital city, Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. And by the way, the left is like hot on the heels of making D.C. a state or a separate and a voting entity. You know, it's never been because of the Constitution. But Muriel Bowser, the mayor, has done nothing, and she's happy about this. And meanwhile, places are, businesses are being destroyed in D.C. the same. And people sitting on the sidewalk eating their dinner are being harassed. And the Black Lives Matter protesters are demanding that they, pledge allegiance to Black Lives Matter. And so that's D.C. And you can see how dangerous this is becoming. It already was. I've told you this. It's an all-out war. So how does Joe Biden and Kamala Harris feel about that? Well, I'm not sure about Joe yet distinctly. We'll probably find out, but Kamala Harris weighed in on The Late Show just a few days ago. Let's listen.
Clear that I know that there are protests still happening in major cities across the United States. I'm just not seeing the reporting on it that I had.
That's right.
For the first few weeks.
That's right. But they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And that's, they're not, this is a movement. I'm telling you, they're not going to stop. And everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not. And we should not.
Okay, good. Thank you, Kamala. They're not going to let up, and they should not let up, and we should be glad. Are you glad? That's the vice presidential candidate for president for the Democrats. And so, and last night, of course, just a couple of nights ago, a guy from Portland was shot dead in the streets. You can actually see the video of it. They say he was wearing a Patriot prayer hat. And by the way, they're blaming it on this Trump caravan. Hundreds of trucks and cars went through Portland just to show support for President Trump and for the country. But it was over. When this guy was shot, it was over. We'll be hearing more about this. Of course we will. Coming up next, something encouraging. Would you like something encouraging? Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin will join us, and he's going to talk about rediscovering masculinity in a challenging world. Oh, brother, is that not needed right now? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio. conquer the land. You may slaughter the people. That is not the end. We will rise again. The day Rome falls, there will be a shout of freedom such as the world has never heard before. I believe in the past of my people and in their future.
You are a conquered people.
Kill me and your mother and sister will die today.
Judah!
May God grant me vengeance. I don't believe in miracles.
All life is a miracle.
I should kiss you goodbye.
Oh, Judah!
My people are praying for a man who can drive their team to victory over Messala. You could be that man.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. If you didn't recognize that voice, you must be over or under a certain age, but that was Charlton Heston in a famous movie of the 50s called Ben-Hur. And it reminds me of not that long ago when Charlton Heston was the epitome of manhood in this country, so were a lot of Hollywood actors who were, of course, acting. But they portrayed characters who embraced a manhood, masculinity in a way that was praised. It was like the norm in this country. That's, I think, when you remember a lot of guys went off to war in World War II, and even though they might have been slight in build or not as big in stature of Charlton Heston, but they aspired to manhood out of that definition. And so that brings us to what's happening today in regards to manhood, and no one better to talk about that who's watched it, observed it, than our next guest, who's written a book called Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World. Lieutenant General William Boykin, Jerry Boykin, he's a retired lieutenant general. He was the former commander of the U.S. Army Special Forces, founding member of Delta Force. He was 36 years with the U.S. Army. He was a Green Beret, a Ranger, and finally with Delta Force, which was the newest entity. He's married to Ashley and has five children. And now he's the Executive Vice President of Family Research Council. And I think he should have on his resume that he's a good friend of mine, but he doesn't. General Boykin, thank you for joining us this morning.
I love you. I really do. As I told you when I called you the other day, I miss you. But thanks for having me on the program.
You know what? It's always great to talk to you, General. And I want to ask right up front. Now, you were a leader of men. I've heard your story. By the way, what is your biography called? The book about your own service.
Yeah, it's called Never Surrender.
Never Surrender. And I can't say enough about that. I heard you tell your story not long ago. It was just powerful. But in that time of leading men, those 36 years, in those exclusive agencies, subgroups of the U.S. Army, I would be curious to hear you contrast the young men you led then and the men that you see in this culture now. What, you led men in dangerous missions. What kind of characteristics did you see then that you're not seeing now?
To begin with, Sandy, I saw men that were rugged. They had endured hardship. You know, when hardship came along, they were emotionally as well as physically prepared for it. Compare that to what we have today, which are a lot of young men that don't know what a man is supposed to be because masculinity has been so denigrated, and it's been combined with the word toxic. And when masculinity, when applied to a man that is living his faith and doing what God's called him to do, is not toxic. But I even had somebody, one I think it was a woman, that wrote a scathing review of my book, Man to Man. Don't teach your children this. This is toxic masculinity. And all I was doing was telling them exactly what my dad was like and what the men of my generation were like. The men of today's generation could be the same kind of men, Sandy. The problem is very much our society is telling them that when they act like real men, that that's toxic masculinity, and it's just destroying the families and the fiber of our society.
Let me ask you, let's talk a little bit about some nuts and bolts, because actually you and I have talked about this too, And that is, even today's young men, I think there's a contrast in their physical appearance and even their physical strength. What can you say about that?
Well, I think all the tests that the Army, for example, has run demonstrate exactly the same thing, that the men are just not as strong or they don't have the stamina that they did when I was coming along, you know, and people were into contact sports, you know, I mean, everybody had to play football or wrestle or have some kind of sport that they were engaged in, you know, and you don't see that much anymore. You know, we still have sports and we still have young men to get engaged, but you don't see the young men trying to build themselves up physically, you know, to impress the ladies, if nothing else. And that's not nearly as popular as it was when I came along. And as a result of that, that's why I think a lot of them are afraid of hardship, afraid to try to do something that requires a level of endurance. My son in 1997 went through the toughest Ranger program that they had had in years because of the weather in Georgia, North Georgia, up in the mountains there, and all was so bad that they lost about 65 or 70% of the Ranger class. And wow. My son made it, and wow. He sat around a fire in Alaska one night and he said, "Dad," I write about this in the book, by the way. He said, "Dad, I made it because you had dragged me out into the elements. You had dragged me out early in the morning to sit in a deer stand or to sit in a duck blind. And I was cold and I was miserable." But he said, when it came to Ranger school, he said, "I knew I could do it because I'd already endured hardship. I knew I could do it. I knew I could get through it." And most of those guys that quit did not. No, they could do it because they'd never endured hardship. That's a message for our men today.
Yeah. You know, I have a good friend in Chicago, very dear friend, former Marine. He's retired now. He's not in very good health. But he was raised on the south side of Chicago in the Italian section. And it was so rough. His story, he became an award-winning photojournalist, Pulitzer Prize-winning. But his upbringing was so tough that he would tell you that the Marine training was hard, but he was so tough, he could do it. He was tough mentally. And so that's interesting to me. It's not just, I mean, we see boys, their shoulders are narrower. You know, they look more like women, but it's not just physical. It's, as you say, it's the mental strength. Would you say that the mental part of it is the feminization of men? Is that how you would characterize that?
I would indeed. I think that is very much the case. And part of it starts with the feminization of Jesus Christ himself. I mean, we don't present the proper image of Jesus. And so the question is, what man wants to be like, what we portray Jesus as. Look, Jesus was a tough guy. I mean, you stop and think about it. It says he's a carpenter, but no, what it really says is he's a constructor, which means he worked with stone as well as wood, which means he had to lift very heavy things. What do you think he might have looked like? I think he had big old bulging veins in his arm. I think he was a narrow waist and broad shoulder. But we present him as just almost being a pacifist, you know. Well, he was a tough guy. When he walked in that... in the temple that day and cut that rawhide whip. Now, theologians can debate, but I don't believe that was for swatting flies. I think he was there to take care of business if he had to. So what we portray as Jesus Christ is not what I think he really was in reality. And what we're doing today is we are presenting men with an image not only of Jesus but of the people that went before us. We're presenting them with an image of a very pacifist, a very weak, a very easygoing man or masculine character. And look, as you said, those guys that came across that beach on D-Day, 6th of June, 1944, they were not looking for safe space. And they didn't believe that there was going to be anybody there that was going to bail them out if they got in trouble. The only safe space was going to be at the end of the war when they could go home to their families. So contrast that to what we have today, Sandy, and it is really a disturbing picture in terms of the young men in our society today.
We'll probably come back to this, but I want to mention it since you brought that up about Jesus and what you believe was his real physical characteristics and also his real nature. I agree with you, and I think probably, of course, it doesn't matter what we think. We have to look at Scripture, and I think you have, I understand that in your book you have a verse that sort of illustrates to you the nature of God when it comes to manliness, and it's Exodus 15:3. The Lord is a warrior, his Lord, yeah. The Lord is his name. And there's another one that came to my attention just a couple of weeks ago. I heard a pastor mention it. It's the Lord fights for you. The Lord, our God fights. He fights for you.
Yeah.
And I don't know that most theologians talk about that very much.
Well, no. And I was just reading in my daily Bible reading yesterday where the psalmist, David, the man after God's own heart, says that God traineth my hands for war, my fingers for battle. Why? Well, that ought to tell you something. And in Revelation 19, it gives us a very vivid picture of Jesus coming back riding a white horse, wearing a bloodstained white robe, and leading a mighty army. And he's got a sword coming out of his mouth. He's coming back to slay his enemies. So how can we not think that somewhere between Exodus 15:3 and Revelation 19, that we're expected to be warriors in God's kingdom? Everybody says God's in control. Yeah, he is in control, but he works through you. And if you're a man, you better make yourself available because you are supposed to be. He saved you. He redeemed you so that you could be a warrior in his kingdom. He works through us. And if we're not willing to get out and be what he's called us to be, then I don't think that we should have any reasonable expectation that God's going to move if we're not willing to do our part.
You know, I'm thinking about, I was thinking about the Revolutionary War when they called them the Black Robes. That
Black
whole,
Robe Regiment.
There were pastors who, as some of them actually took off their robes and put on a uniform. Did they get the theology wrong there? I mean, how could a pastor do that? You're a pastor.
I'm not a pastor, I'm an ordained minister, but that Black Robe Regiment, the guy you're talking about is John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg, you know, which was the son and grandson of a long line of pastors. And on the 26th of January, 1776, when the church was trying to decide what to do, he walked in there and preached from Ecclesiastes 3 and said, there's a season for all things. And he came to the end and he said, there's a time to preach and there's a time to pray, and the time for me to pray has gone away. And he took off his robe and revealed the uniform of a colonel in the 8th Virginia Militia. George Washington had personally commissioned him, and he led 330 people through the Revolutionary War and came out of the war as a major general. That was a theologian, and his brother, Frederick, eventually wound up joining him. But his brother, Frederick, was against the war to begin with. But history will tell you that Black Robe Regiment was men in black robes in the pulpits across the 13 colonies that were preaching what they believed to be was God's directive for these 13 colonies. And that was a message of freedom. John Adams said, the pulpits have thundered with the ring of freedom, and that was men that were leading. If you look at what's happening on the streets of America today, and I was doing a program with Fox News, and Neil Cavuto said, well, he showed some of that, and he said, what do you think? And I said, one thing, where are the men? Where are the men? Where are the men that should be out there dragging those young boys off the street out there and running them home? And where are the men that should be out there leading? And leading people, if they want to demonstrate keeping it peaceful. But, that's one of the problems, is there's a lack of men out there because men have been feminized.
Yes. And so, of course, we're talking about the broad culture, and we're also talking about churches. And that reminds me of a quote from your good friend Stu Weber, who's going to be coming with you to a couple of conferences that you're doing, by the way, which we're going to get to in just a second. Yeah. One of them is going to be in Florida, and it's coming right up. It's called, I've got it right here. What is it called? It's called Stand Courageous, Stand Courageous Men's Conference. And by the way, that's General Boykin's going to be joined by Tony Perkins and Stu Weber and Bishop Larry Jackson. And it's going to be on September the 12th. And if you'd like to go, you can call 1-800-225-4008, 1-800-225-4008. It's going to be in Leesburg, Florida, and I think there's going to be another one in St. Lucie. I'm not sure about the date of that one, but the one coming up next is September 12th in Leesburg, Florida, and that's 1-800-225-4008. And by the way, the book is called Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World. We're not done, General Boykin. When we come back, let's talk about what we've seen on the streets, what's happening when men are absent, but there are other terrible things that happen when men don't take their place, and let's talk about those. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What does it mean to be a man in today's world? And what does God intend for men and boys to be? Some would say that men should just sit on the sidelines. But God wants something different for His men. He wants you to stand courageous.
There's an all-out deliberate assault on masculinity, and we have got to start taking back our role as men.
Men, it's time. It's time to return to biblical masculinity.
The women in your churches don't know how to tell you, but they really want you to be a man.
At the Stand Courageous Men's Conference, in addition to founding Delta Force member General Jerry Boykin, you'll hear from FRC President Tony Perkins, Pastor Stu Weber, Bishop Larry Jackson, and others who will help guide you as a man to be a provider, battle buddy, instructor, defender, and chaplain in your home and in your spheres of influence. You'll hear solid biblical teaching and get tools to grow in your walk as a man. Bring your teenage sons, bring your dad, bring a friend. Stand courageous with us. Visit standcourageous.com for more information.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. My special guest is, of course, General Jerry Boykin, and founder of Delta Force, and the author of this new book called Man to Man. And it's there. He's coming to Florida and other countries, maybe other countries, other cities around the country. But for this time, he's coming to Florida twice. And it's the Stand Courageous Men's Conference. By the way, Stand Courageous is the part of Family Research Council. So Tony Perkins will be coming with him as well as Bishop Larry Jackson and then Pastor Stu Weber, which it's September the 12th, by the way. It starts at 8 o'clock. And you can, General Boykin, can boys come? I mean, how young could young men come?
If you've got a son, bring your son to this conference. Bring your son. You will not be disappointed. And I don't care how young he is or how old he is. This is a conference for men of all ages. And we do something very special for the fathers and sons there at the end.
Wow. Well, that just makes me wish my son were not in Scotland and my two grandsons, but they are. But we'll have to transport them over here. But anyway, let me just say that if you would like to go, you can call this number. It's 1-800-225-4008, 1-800-225-4008. Or if you want to do it online, it's secure.standcourageous.com/Leesburg, Florida. That's secure.standcourageous.com/Leesburg, Florida. And of course, we'll put that on our Facebook page. All right, here's a quote from your buddy Stu Weber, the pastor who's coming with you, by the way, on the 12th. He says, young men aspire to it. Women admire it. A real man. We all understand that when men get it right, everyone wins. Men, women, children. But when a man gets it wrong, everyone hurts badly. Yeah. Is that true? Do you think that's true?
I don't think there's any question about it. Look, families are disintegrating, you know, today, and it is the single biggest cause is because of the absentee fathers. And what our society has done is they have really not only feminized men, but the feminist movement itself has made many men feel like they're just sperm donors, that they are just sires, and then they have no responsibility for being in the family, raising the family, providing guidance to the family, doing the things that God's called men to be, you know. And that's just destroying the fabric of our nation today, and especially in the inner cities. If you look at the inner cities, at the absentee father rate, it's just terrible. And so many young men and women are growing up today without the guidance from a man in the home.
You know, I want to ask you something. I know this; it's easier probably to have this conversation with a man, but since I, you know, raised a couple of boys and I felt like my life has been spent working with men, that's for sure. So I've always liked men. I was the woman who liked, I've never been a feminist. And but my point is this, when you see Antifa on the streets and you see these guys, you know, with their faces covered and black and they're so violent and so merciless. And same thing with Black Lives Matter. I mean, and there's like they, yeah. Black Lives Matter, some white, some black. I find myself wondering if the part of the thing that fuels that is the suppression of these of the aggressions that God has created, that the testosterone that God has created men with is it's like a channeling of that. Would do you think that's part of what's fueling this?
Well, I think you've read the book already. I address that issue, Sandy. There is no question in my mind. I am absolutely convinced that the average man comes out of the womb meant to be a warrior. Now, that does not mean a man grabbing an AR-15 and going into the streets necessarily. There, you know, that we see that sometimes for the right reasons to demonstrate their support for the Second Amendment. But I believe a man comes out of the womb meant to be a warrior. I mean, someone with courage, someone with, that is willing to defend what he believes in, what he holds dear. And that's one of the things that I say in the book, a man is designed to be, is a defender. A man defends what he holds dear. A man defends what's important to him. He defends his values. And I believe that a man comes out of the womb designed to be a warrior, and then what he hears from our society, which is one of the reasons for so much PTSD, by the way, what he hears is that, no, you're no different than a woman. Anything you can do, she can do. And we downgrade the man's role in our society and in the family, in the home, in the church, in the workplace. And all that's doing is just destroying the fabric of America. But, Sandy, let me just say this. This is very deliberate. This is not something that just emerged. This is something that has been a part of the Marxist movement in America, certainly since 1958 when the book The Naked Communist was written, and they told us what they were going to do to destroy America and to take over America, and it included, and in fact, much of it was focused on destroying the man and thereby destroying our family structure, which is the most important structure in our nation. And it included not only things like getting men addicted to pornography and all, but it also included denigrating the whole concept of masculinity. And that's what we're seeing right now today. And it's just killing us.
It really is. I saw in the midst of all these riots and disturbances, it's been probably a month or so, maybe 6 weeks, when I saw a couple that owned a store. And you see, the video shows these very large men, like six of them, I think, trying to break out their windows. And the wife comes out, and she tries to talk. You can't hear, but you see her motioning, her arms. She's small. She's looking up at them, and she's pleading with them, and she's saying, "But you know, you can just imagine. Please don't. Why are you? Please don't. We care about Black Lives Matter. Please don't do that." And at first, they kind of backed away, And then they came back and they beat her mercilessly. This little white woman, they beat her mercilessly. And the guy, the husband comes out and you can hear, he says, stop, you're beating my wife. But he's helpless. He's helpless. And the thing that struck me, General Boykin, is that he didn't know how to fight. He wasn't equipped to do anything in his own wife's defense.
Yeah, Sandy, that's, again, I think you've read the book, because I addressed just that issue, that any man that ever walks by a woman being abused, whether it's a member of his family or whether it's just a woman that he does not know, he walks by that and doesn't at least attempt to do something, he's wrong. He's wrong. He's outside of what God's design is for a man. You've got to be willing to defend the defenseless, and that starts with the women. And certainly that transitions over into the unborn as well. But a man has to be willing to stand up to evil. Because in Psalms 94, the Bible asks us, who will take a stand against this evil for me? Who will rise up against these doers of iniquity? That's talking to us. And when a woman is being abused, whether she's being slapped around or raped, or if a man walks by that and doesn't do anything, he's a coward, and he's also outside of what I believe God expects him to do.
How in the world, you know, you talk about, you give a positive, we should at least say, as briefly as we can, what you think a man, you've said in a negative way, we talked about what a man should be, but what do you think God's design is based on your study and your production of this book, Man to Man? What should a man look like? What should he look like?
I outline five things that a man should be. Number one, a man should be a provider. Now, that is not just physical, provision or money, monetary. A man provides a lot more than that. He provides identity. He provides direction. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I mean, that kind of direction. A man provides leadership in the home, but a man provides a presence in the home, and that's what's lacking in America today. Number two, a man is a defender, and we just talked about that. A man defends his values. He defends what he holds dear. He defends the weak. Number three, a man is an instructor. A man is supposed to know what's happening in the world around him and know the Bible. He needs to know both of them. And he needs to be able to bring the two together. And he must be the one who instructs the family, instructs those around him in the way that they should go and the values that are outlined in the Bible. Number four, a man is a battle buddy, and a man needs to be. My battle buddy is Stu Weber. You just talked about him several times. And I can call him anytime I want to, and we spend wonderful time together, but I talk to him. I talked to him about my struggles. I talked to him about my fears. I talked to him about the things that I'm apprehensive about, and he does the same for me. And when I need prayer, I pick up the phone and call Stu Weber. That's a battle buddy. He won't compromise me. And a battle buddy, you've got to be a battle buddy to somebody that can call you when they need prayer, that can call you when they have fears and apprehensions. And that's, for me, that's Stu Weber. Number five, though, is a man's chaplain. And that means a man's got to be in the Word. He's got to know the Word. He's got to be able to explain it. And these old grandpas that show up at the family dinner at Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving and all, Grandpa, let them see you pray. What kind of legacy do you want to leave? You want to leave a legacy to where your grandchildren say, my grandpa was a man of prayer. That's more important than anything, more important than any monetary things. My grandpa was a man of faith. Let him see you pray. But the father in the house has to be the chaplain, and he has to be able to explain the complexities of the Word of God, those things that are hard for us to understand. The man has to have spent time in the Word, time in the study of the Word, and has to be able to give explanation and understanding to the people around him in terms of the complexities of that Bible. Those are the five things that I say in the book that a man is supposed to be. And by the way, the book is designed so that at the end of every chapter, there are 10 study questions. And if men want to pull together a little small group and go through a chapter at a time or whatever, they've got 10 study questions at the back. And then the other thing that's in the back is a word to the women.
I had Lila Gilbert who helped me out with the book. And the lady that I got to help me with the book is a lady named Lila Gilbert, who wrote Saturday People, Sunday People, a wonderful author and a great Christian lady. And she wrote a thing in the back of each chapter, a word to the women. So there's something for everybody in the book, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like women's issues affect men. We're seamlessly
yes.
connected, you know. How could we be
That's
so
right.
separate? And it's only That's the right. left that tries to separate us and turn us against each other because we complement each other as God has designed it. So the book is called Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World. And it's written by, of course, our guest, retired Lieutenant General William Boykin. Let me just say that he's coming to Florida, a couple of places. The first one coming up, though, is Leesburg, Florida. That's September the 12th for the Stand Courageous Men's Conference. And if you want to come, you got to go to call 1-800-225-4008. 1-800-225-4008. It's September the 12th. And bring your kids, bring your sons and your grandsons and your children, boys anyway, for that conference, as well as your neighbors and friends. General Boykin, you are, of course, as I've said many times, a national treasure. And I thank God for you. So take care. Sandy Rios,
well,
in the morning
God bless
on AFR
you.
Talk.